الحمد لله رب العالمين، لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم، الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. We gathered here today for a majlis of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and I would like to request all of you to recite a surah al-Fatiha for all the marhumin and marhumat of Brother Musa and his family. As we approach the end of the month of Safar, it is a time for us to think about the experiences we had over the last 40 days or so, remembering the tragedy of Karbala. And we have to ask ourselves, what is it that we are going to do to respond to the call of Imam Hussein alayhi salam? One of the responsibilities that we have as the followers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam is to have a strong community and to have very good ties and very good bonds amongst each other. In one hadith, and we have many hadith, we have many ahadith like this one. This is reported from our sixth Imam alayhi as-salam. He says to his companions that ittaqullah, have taqwa of Allah. All the Imams would tell their companions, have taqwa of Allah. But then he goes on to explain, in what dimension can you have taqwa of Allah? وَكُونُوا إِخْوَةً بَرَرًا. Be brothers to one another. Not just any type of brothers, but brothers who are barara. Barara comes from the word bir and bar, meaning extremely good. Extremely good brothers. In what way? مُتَحَابِينَ فِي اللَّهِ. You should love one another for the sake of Allah. Mutawassilin, you should be in contact with each other and having strong ties with one another. Mutarahimin, you should be showing mercy to one another and compassion. Tazawaru, go do ziyara of one another. Watalaku, and meet one another. Watadhakaru amrana wa ahyuhu, and then don't just stop there, but when you meet each other and you go and visit one another, then you should remember our affair, our mission, the mission of the Ahlul Bayt, the cause of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, and you should give life to it as well. This is a command from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. And as I said, we have many of these type of commands where they describe the need for mu'mineen to be together, to be a strong community, to have strong bonds with one another, to have good relationships with one another. After all, the Quran tells us, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim, inna hadha ummatukum ummatan wahida." This ummah of yours is one ummah. Wa ana rabbukum fa'budun, and I am your Lord, and so worship me. The Quran tells us that you have one ummah, we have one community. And one of our responsibilities as followers of the Ahlul Bayt is to put this into reality. But when we look at the situation of the followers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi as-salam, whether they be in this city or whether they be anywhere in North America, as far as I'm concerned, for the most part, we can say that this is an area in which we need to improve. Yes, it's true that we have some buildings that sometimes we come and meet each other at. Yes, it's true that we have these type of gatherings. But when you look at the ideal of the way the Ahlul Bayt alayhi as-salam wanted us to be, the strength of the relationships they wanted us to have with one another, we see that maybe this is an area that we need to work on. So what I'd like to do, inshallah, in the majlis today is to mentions some specific examples that the Ahlul Bayt have given us, which would show what it means to have a strong community. The first one is the following. Imagine that somebody were to come and tell you something negative about somebody. You hear something about somebody else and it's something that you dislike hearing about them. Now, you go and you go to that person that this news is about and you ask them about it and they deny what that other person has said. Okay, now you have two different versions. One is the thing you heard about him, negative, and then this person is denying it. Now you go to a second person and they tell you the same thing that the very first person said. Two people now are telling you there's something negative about this person is denying it. A third person you go to, they tell you the same thing. A fourth person, fifth person. All the way until you get to 50 people. 50 people are telling you something negative about somebody, but that person who's a mu'min is denying the thing that that person is saying. What is it that we would do? Now, in a normal situation, if we didn't have iman, if we didn't have the instructions of the Qur'an and the Ahlul Bayt, we'd say, okay, it's 50 versus 1. The majority wins. It's not just a majority, it's like almost a, you know, a massive, massive like sweep. Of course we would take the word of 50 people over the word of one person. But you see, the community that the Ahlul Bayt wanted us to have is a community which is based on our relationship with Allah. And so some of the parameters and some of the rules change. One time, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi was seen in front of the Kaaba. And he points to the Kaaba and he says, O Kaaba, how wonderful and amazing of a building you are. And what hurma you possess, what sanctity you possess. But, and he's telling this for the benefit of those who are around him, he says that إِنَّ الْمُؤْمِنَ أَعْظَمُ حُرْمَ. The mu'min has more hurma than you have. O Kaaba. The sanctity of a believer is so much that even if you were to destroy the Kaaba, that would be preferable than destroying the reputation of a believer. One time, a man comes to our sixth imam and he says that somebody is telling me something negative about somebody. But when I ask him that, he denies it. Whom should I believe? The imam alayhi salam tells him that, oh, so and so, even if 50 people were to come to you and take an oath that this thing is true about this person, كَذِّبْهُمْ. Do not believe them. If this person is telling you that it's not true, believe this person. Maintain his sanctity. It's something for us to think about. This is the type, when the Imam al-Islam says that you should have mercy and compassion for one another, this is an example of it. You don't just believe somebody and start spreading things. No, you understand. You even if 50 people were to, but this person, because he is saying that something else, you believe him. That's one example. I'll give you another example. Imagine that you and you, I mean myself, yourself, anybody, okay, that we were to do something, we were to do a good act. Okay, let's say for example, we're working on a project in the community, some type of effort. Alhamdulillah, there's a lot of efforts going on, especially in the GTA, many, many things, many, many different, you know, types of efforts in very various areas. Imagine we were to do something, some sort of effort, but we were not to be recognized for that thing. There was an award ceremony, our name got left out. There was applause that was given, but it wasn't for us. Other people were asked to come up to the stage and the photos were taken, but our photos were not taken. What would we do? Now again, in a typical community, in a typical society, this would be a cause of great insult. It would be something that would be a personal issue, right? We would make it a big thing, right? We would make sure that, you know, somehow, in some way, that that recognition should be given, and we would justify it as well. Because we would say that, after all, you know, I put in that work, I put in that effort, I have to be recognized for it. But again, when we go to the instructions of the Ahlul Bayt, when we see the viewpoint of Islam on this issue is something completely different. One time there was a man, his name was Sa'asama. Sa'asama was one of the companions and the friends of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Sa'asama falls ill. Guess who goes to visit him? None other than Amir al-Mu'mineen himself. He goes to his home and does visits him. Sometimes we, unfortunately, we get so busy, right? Say we send a text message, right? Say everything okay. Send an email, everything okay. Right? But we don't go and visit in person. Imam Ali Islam goes and visits his companion in person. Imagine how busy Imam Ali must have been, but he takes the time. He goes and visits him as a way of consoling him, as a way of praying for him, helping him. And then as he stands to leave, he tells him, "Oh Sa'asama," very, very interesting. He says, "Oh Sa'asama, لا تفتخرن على إخوانك بعيادتي إياك." Don't use my visit to you to be a source of you bragging to your companions. Just because I've come and seen you, doesn't mean that now you have bragging rights. I did this. I'm this. I have this. واتق الله, but have taqwa of Allah instead. What is the spirit that Amir al-Mu'mineen is teaching Sa'asama? It's a spirit of doing things for the sake of Allah and for none other than Allah. Not for the applause, not for the awards, not for the pictures, not for the limelight. When Ayatollah Khamenei Hafidhahullah is speaking about how a basij should be, very, very interesting. What does it mean to be a basij? Meaning somebody who just works for the sake of the Imam. He says that if you really have ishq for the cause of the Imam of our time, then that ishq is not something on the outside, it's something inside. So there can never be something on the outside that gives you motivation to do something for his sake. You see, it's a very subtle but very important point. If you're doing it out of ishq, then the ishq itself is the reward for doing something which is good. And that's why all these types of things like honors and titles and accolades and praises, all these things fall by the wayside. Ishq is something in the inside, and that's why that's a spirit that we get from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. When they do something good, what do they say? Do they say that, okay, I need to take a selfie and put it on my Facebook page? Astaghfirullah. They say that, لَا نُرِيدُ مِنْكُمْ جَزَاءً وَلَا شُكُورًا. We don't want any jaza, we don't want any shukr from you either. We don't want a thanks. We're doing it purely for the sake. إِنَّمَا نُطْعِمُكُمْ لِوَجْهِ اللَّهِ, for the sake of Allah. So these are key values that we learn from the Ahlul Bayt about how we should be with one another. And on the other hand, if we ignore these points, the first one, as I mentioned, was about how to protect the reputation of others. The second one was about doing things for the sake of Allah. If we ignore these, then we start to see that the community becomes divided. It becomes fractured. We don't have that spirit. We don't live up to the commands of the Ahlul Bayt. I'll give you another example. Imagine that there's somebody who comes and begins to insult and begins to do something very wrong. Right? Does something, maybe insults our us, insults our family, does something, you know, causes gossip about us, you know, makes our reputation, whatever it is. And then they go away. What would our response be to that? One of my teachers, I remember in one of the classes, he gave this example. He said, and this was back in Iran where, you know, people are, for the most part, mu'mineen. He says, imagine somebody were to come and they were to get in an accident with you, like their car, and you get in an accident, how would you treat that person after the accident? And he asked us that question. He said, would you treat them any differently than your friend? And it's something to think about, because wait a minute. Yeah, he got an accident. Like, he's the one who crashed into me, right? He ruined my brand new, I don't know, BMW or in my Paycon, like in Iran, right? Or he ruined it. But he's a mu'min. How am I supposed to treat him at this point? Somebody comes, they insult us, they insult our family, they ruin our reputation, they gossip on us, whatever it is. How are we going to treat them afterwards? In one hadith, the sixth Imam al-Islam, he says that when I see that there are two mu'mineen and they do hijran with each other, they cut off their ties from one another, they stop talking to another, he says that I will go and I will curse one of them. And how often it's the case that I curse both of them. This is something to think about. He says, how often it's the case that I curse both of them. Now the narrator of this hadith, he says that he's surprised. He says to the Imam, he says that one of them is the zalim. One of them has done the wrong. The other one is the mazlum. The other one has been wronged. Why would you go and you would curse the madlum? What has he done? The zalim has done wrong. He's the one who then cut off relationships. Why would you curse the one who has been wronged? Imam al-Islam tells him that why didn't he go, the one who was wronged, why didn't he go to that person who was the zalim and tell him, Ana zalim, I am the one who did wrong, and try to mend the relationship between. That's the expectation that Ahlul Bayt have for us. Now you might be asking yourself that that's not something which is easy to do. Okay, that person got in an accident with me, right? I'm going to be angry with them. Right? I'm going to feel like upset. But that's not the spirit that we are supposed to have. Remember the first hadith that we quote from Imam, Mutarahimeen, Mutawasileen. They're supposed to have mutual compassion and mercy, mutually establishing the ties and becoming stronger with each other. Sallallahu alaihi Muhammad. One of the great scholars of recent times, his name was Sayyid Qadi Tabatabai, rahmatullahi alayh. He was the spiritual teacher of the likes of Ayatollah Behjad, the likes of Alama Tabatabai, rahmatullahi alayh, the likes of even Ayatollah Khuy, rahmatullahi alayh, and many, many others. Sayyid Qadi, because of his teachings and because of his way, sometimes people would speak ill of him. He was a pure individual, he was a great scholar, but there were some who didn't understand him, and as a result, they would speak negatively against him. One of these people who would speak negatively against him happened to be the prayer leader of one of the Salatul Jama'at in Najaf, at that time when Sayyid Qadi was living there. He was very famous. He himself was a scholar and author. But he had so much negativity towards Sayyid Qadi Tabatabai that when Sayyid Qadi would say salam to him, he would never even respond to the salam. Some of our scholars really had to suffer a lot. If I could just ask brothers to move forward with salawat ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
This scholar does not even say salam to Sayyid Qadi Tabatabai. Now Sayyid Qadi, as the years went by, he began to gain more and more prominence in the city of Najaf. This was the center of the Shia scholarship at that time. The Hawza was based there. He became more and more popular, more and more famous. His students would be there as well. And one day they ask him, they say that, we know that, we've seen that he doesn't even say salam to you. He speaks openly against you, our teacher, Sayyidina. Tell us, what should we do with him? Should we go pray behind him or should we stop praying behind him? What does he tell them? He says that you should go, you go and participate in his salah. He has a good salah. Go there. This is the spirit of the followers of the Ahlul Bayt. Yes, it's true that he was wrong about him. But he hadn't lost his adala. This was an academic opinion. He was forming it on an academic basis. He wasn't sinning. And he had a negative opinion of him. He wouldn't say his salam out of what he thought was his religious duty. Doesn't mean that you can't go and pray behind him. You see, these are the values that the Ahlul Bayt teach us about how we should be with our community. Another example I would give you. Imagine that the example they gave you before was that you do something and you're not recognized for it. Here, it's a bit different. That you find that somebody else is taking the limelight for something. Right? This happens. That we might be in a community, it might be the case that everyone's striving hard, everyone's trying to do good work. But there are some who, for whatever reason, they take the limelight. They are the ones who are recognized. For example, in a school environment, oftentimes you'll find that there are some students who are brighter than the others. Right? They always win the prizes. They always get first in the competitions. Okay, it happens. Right? And as a result, that child is in the limelight. And their parents are then in the limelight as well too. Now, let's say you find yourself in a situation that somebody else is taking the limelight and not yourself. In that case, how should we view that? Oftentimes this becomes a test. It becomes a test when somebody else is there, they're taking the leadership role, they're getting the limelight. How is it that we react? And this becomes the source of difficulty and of even splintering as well too. Let him do his own thing, I'm going to do my own thing. If they're being praised for that, let me find some way to spread something negative about them. This is the way the human mind, if it doesn't have the conditioning of taqwa, this is how it might operate. But you see, the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt again tell us something different. In one beautiful hadith from Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, he says that
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
He says that the people of your faith have a haq on you. They have a right on you. Right? We have this right of brotherhood. This term brother is something which isn't to be taken lightly. We call each other brother this, but brother in Islam is a very sacred term. It's not supposed to be something which is bandied about lightly. Imam al-Islam says that the right of the people of the community, the right of the people of the religion, is that there أن يكون شيوخهم بمنزلة أبيك. You should take their elders as your own parents. وشبابهم بمنزلة إخوتك. And their youth as your own brethren. وعجائزهم بمنزلة أمك. And the same thing, that they're all the elderly ladies as your mother. والصغار بمنزلة أولادك. And you should take their young ones as your children. From the perspective of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, if somebody is succeeding, if somebody has the limelight, if somebody is doing well in the community, their success is my success. There is no difference if it's my child or it's your child. If it's you or it's me. The point is that is the community as a whole, is it excelling? Is it succeeding? Imam Hussein alayhi salam tells us in one hadith that everyone, as a mu'min, the responsibility is that everyone that you come across, when you go out, you should be able to say, huwa khayrun minni, that he is better than I am. This is something, again, now, if it's the case that I look at somebody's successes and I start to feel that something's wrong, that they're getting the limelight, I'm not, then I haven't adopted the teaching of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, who says, huwa khayrun minni, he's better than me. There's one story of one of the Urafa, his name is Hashim al-Haddad. Hashim al-Haddad was one of the students of Sayyid Khalid al-Batbai. Okay, and he was a great scholar of his own, in his own right. Hashim al-Haddad was somebody who was a very humble person. And I'm giving you this example as a way of reminding ourselves of the importance of having humility. One time he is riding in a taxi, and he's with some of the mu'mineen, and it comes time to pay for the taxi ride. And this is in Qadmi, he used to live in Iraq. Now, normally when you pay for a taxi ride, at that time you would be paying per person in the taxi. So the taxi driver says, okay, it's time for you to pay for the amount of the taxi. And he gives the amount for 5 people. Now it turns out that they had squished in, there was 7 people in the taxi, including the driver, and then Hashim al-Haddad, and then there was 4 other people. Sorry, 5 other people, yeah. So he should have paid the amount of 6 people, but he gives the amount for 5 people. The taxi driver tells him, he realizes that he's a scholar, he says that, can you please count your money again? And it seems that perhaps you might have made a mistake. He counts again, he comes up with the amount for 5 people, and he gives it to the taxi driver, 5 people. The taxi driver says that, it seems that you're forgetting to count yourself. He does it again, and again he comes with the 5 people, 5 people. Now the people who are with him, you know, they have to speak up as well too, because you know they respect for him. They don't wanna insult him. They don't make him feel bad. But they realize that if he don't say anything, he's gonna give the wrong amount. So they tell him that, oh, Hashim al-Haddad, there's 6 of us who should be giving enough for 6 people. So out of respect for them, you know, he gives the amount for 6 people. Later on, he realizes that he was in such a state of tawheed at that time. He was in such a state of being in submission to Allah at that time that he wasn't even able to count himself there. He was looking at the others around him and he was counting. He didn't even see himself in that car. Now, you might be asking yourself, why give this example? It's an extreme example. Yes, right? It's an example of somebody who had reached a different level, but it gives us some inspiration that if you compare that to a typical political type of approach to this, when somebody else is given the limelight, it's all about me, I. That person is there, but I am like this. But see, the ulama, the urafa, those who strive to perfect themselves, they get to the point where they don't even see themselves. It's not important. It's not important. I'm not important. What's important is Allah and serving the cause of Allah. And my brothers, this happens, this takes many forms. Right? Sometimes the form is something different where it's not about that person taking the limelight, but maybe that person has an idea and it's a good idea, but because it's their idea, I don't want to accept it. You know, I want to have my own idea. I want to have my own stake on it. My name, somehow I have to put myself, I have to stamp myself onto that as well too. So these are some of the values that we learn from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam about too. About how to have a community. Salawat ala Muhammad wa Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil.
Nara Hadri!
Ya Ali!
Muhammad wa ali Muhammad salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad
wa ajil. I've given you 4 examples. The last example I'll give you is this one. Imagine you notice that there's somebody from the community who was used to see them, used to be aware, and they used to be with you, and suddenly you don't see them anymore. They disappear. What would you do in that circumstance? Now this is something which we have to think about, because the first question that comes to mind for me is that if somebody were to somehow not come anymore, I'm not sure if I would even know about that. I'm not sure if I would even be aware of that, because after all, I don't interact with people that much. The way that our lives are structured here in the West is something, you know, where sometimes we come together. Right? When there's an occasion, when there's a major sort of thing, right, then we happen to see each other. But the way that the ideal that Islamic community is supposed to be based on is something completely different. It's something where if somebody is missing, it becomes something of a concern to the entire community, because they're used to seeing that person on a regular basis. Where are they used to seeing them? They're used to seeing them in their mosque. They meet each other on a regular basis for salah. This was the seerah of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
According to hadith, when Rasulullah would see that one of the brothers would be missing for 3 days, this would be a big deal for him. He would ask about him. if he was traveling, then he would make dua for him. And if he was present, then he would go and visit him. If he would sick, he was sick, he would go and do ayada. He would go and visit him, you know, the type of visit that you have to have with somebody who was sick. But he wouldn't be ignorant of the fact. It wouldn't be something where, oh, it's a passive sort of thing. It would be something where Rasulullah is monitoring, he's aware, and he cares. He cares about what's going on with others. Again, I ask myself, and I ask you all, that if you look at this ideal of some of these values that a community should have, and you look at where we are, you see that there's some room for improvement. There's some goals that we can, inshallah, improve on. Here in this part of the city, alhamdulillah, we're blessed with many mu'mineen, many centers as well too. Are we using our common points of gathering for the purpose of establishing these type of ideals of communities that the Ahlul Bayt in Islam have encouraged us to establish? Inshallah, this can be a point of reflection and a point of homework for all of us as we, inshallah, move forward. As we approach the end of the season of mourning, I want to remind myself and all of you of the importance of the tears that we shed for the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. One of the secrets to success that the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam have given us, one of the paths to achieving whatever we desire in the way of Allah that the Ahlul Bayt have taught us, is to remember their tragedies and to mourn over them and to soften our hearts with the remembrance of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. Because when Allah sees that a believer is able to soften his heart for the tragedies that befell the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, then Allah looks upon them with mercy. Allah grants their hajat. There was this one mujtahid, a great scholar in Najaf many years ago. And on account of the research that he was doing, the intense research that he would be doing, eventually he lost his eyesight. Now for a scholar, for anyone to lose their eyesight is something which is a major thing. But for a scholar whose profession and whose occupation and whose passion is in reading and studying, to lose eyesight is something which is very tragic. He becomes very sad. He doesn't know what to do, but suddenly this thought comes to him that let me do tawassul to the daughter of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, Sayyidah Zainab alayhi salam. And so one night, before going to bed, he remembers this great lady, Zainab alayhi salam. And he asks Allah to cure him of his blindness by the sake of Sayyidah Zainab. That night in his dream, he is visited by a lady who is very illustrious and with incredible iffa and incredible hijab. And as she comes to him, she takes a corner of that chador, that corner of the over the wrap that she has wrapped herself with, and she rubs it on his eyes. And when he wakes in the next morning, he sees his eyesight has been restored to him. We all have our own blindness, whether it be blindness of our heart or blindness in other ways. And we ask Allah, by the sake of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, to remove that blindness from us. صلى الله عليك يا أبا عبد الله صلى الله عليك يا ابن رسول الله يا سيد الشهداء يا سفينة النجاة أيها المقتول بكربلاء عطشانا He Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you, O beloved Imam Hussein, O Sayyid al-Shahada, millions of your followers over these last few days have been blessed with that opportunity to come to you and to tell you, Labbaik Ya Hussein. I was deprived of that special opportunity, O Abu Abdullah. But I know that even now, if I call upon you, if I send my salam to you, that you will be one who listens to me, and perhaps I will receive your reply. Ya Aba Abdullah, Ya Laytana Kunna Ma'akum, Fanafuza Ma'akum Fawzan Azeema. One of the most tragic events in Karbala is that moment of farewell. Most times, when soldiers go to the battlefield, they have left their family back home. There's a clean separation. The memories are distant of their children and their loved ones. But in the sake of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam, his loved ones are on the battlefield with him. His women, his children are in his own tent. What a tragedy that he has to bear as he bids them farewell. There is no separation between them and the battlefield. As he is saying goodbye to them, the arrows begin to pour down. As he is mounting the horse, the female members of his household know what that means. There is one daughter of his who is standing aside from the rest of them. As he is leaving, he notices his daughter Sakina standing aloof from the rest of them. She is quiet, she is mourning in her own way. He goes to her and addresses her, O Sukaina. She tells him, O my father, do you surrender now to death? Does this mean that you are now no longer going to return to us? Imam Hussein alayhi salam tells her, O my daughter, after all, what choice do I have? She tells him, O my father, if this is what it means, then I have one request of you. Oh, my father, take me back to the haram of my grandfather, Rasulullah. I do not know what Imam Hussein alayhi salam is thinking at this moment. Perhaps he is thinking that, oh my daughter, if you only knew what will it be like after I go to the battlefield, even when your auntie returns back to Medina, it will not be something to be joyous about. There will be no one to accompany you if you were to go back to Medina. One of the poets writes some poetry. He says that at this point, perhaps Imam Hussein alayhi salam wishes to tell his daughter that, oh my dear one, this is the last time that we will meet together. But I promise you there will be one more meeting that will be at the pond of Kothar. Oh my dear one, if you wish to cry, then cry, but do not cry so much. Do not cry so much, oh my dear one. Have some patience. Have patience. Remember Allah, oh my dear one. Oh my dear one, when you hear the cries come from the battlefield, when you hear them crying Allahu Akbar, be patient, oh my dear one. Oh my dear one, when you see my horse coming back to the tent and you see me no longer on that horse, then be patient, my dear one. What a tragedy it was, what a difficulty it must have been, as they are being taken into the court of Sham. They say that the daughters of Imam Hussein alayhi salam were very keen on seeing their father in the court of Yazid. When Yazid hears this, he is very happy. He tells his people that go and show them the head of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. But when they see the head, they are so shocked they cannot stop from crying. At that point, Yazid la'anatullahi alayhi takes up a rod and he begins to hit the blessed head of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He cries out, "A day in exchange for a day. This is my time for revenge over you, over what you did to my forefathers in the Battle of Badr." He is so happy, and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam are so sad. When they ask Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, "Oh Sajjad, tell us what was the most difficult time of the entire affair." He says three times, "Asham, Asham, Asham." There is one who visits the Imam alayhi salam. He sees him in the dungeon. He asks him a question. He says, "Why is it that I see your skin is burnt like this, oh Imam?" He tells him, "Don't you see? This prison, this dungeon has no protection against the sun. When it gets hot outside, we too burn inside this prison." How difficult it must have been for the ladies of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam, knowing that they are the household of guidance to the people. They are the people that Allah has commanded in the Quran, the people, the Muslims, to love and to respect and to obey. At one point, the young daughter of Imam Hussein alayhi salam sees a dream. She sees her father in that dream. She cries out, "Oh my father," and she cannot get over the vision that she has seen of her father. The ladies must have had so much pity for her. They must have remembered how close she was to her father, how much he used to love her. They do not know how to console her. The tears and the noise erupts from the dungeon. News reaches Yazid. "What is it that's going on?" The young daughter of Imam Hussein alayhi salam is crying out, "Ituni bi walidi wa qurrati aini." Bring me my father and the beloved of my heart. Yazid, the heartless one, says, "Okay, go ahead and give her the head of her father." They bring the head on a plate to her. She asks the question, "Mahadharas, whose head is this?" They tell her, "This is the head of your father." She cries out, "Ya abata, man dhalladhi khattabaka bidima'ik." "Oh my father, who is it that has colored your head with your own blood?" "Oh my father, who is it that has severed your head from your neck?" "Oh my father, who is it that has made me an orphan despite my young age?" As the caravan of the Ahlul Bayt is leaving Sham, there's one who is there they are leaving behind, the young daughter of Imam Hussein. We send our salams to her and to the Ahlul Bayt alayhim assalam. Assalamu alaykum wa ala jami'i shuhada'i Karbala wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We ask Allah Ta'ala in His mercy and His compassion to accept these efforts. We ask Him to accept this majlis and to give this home many blessings, and that He protect the children of this home, and that He give this family barakah and tawfiq. We ask Allah to protect and preserve all the youth and the children of this community, and to give barakah to all the families, to give us this united and strong community. We ask Allah to hasten the reappearance of the Imam of our time, and to help us be among those who are chosen as companions. and to protect and preserve all those who are serving the cause of Islam, all the maraji, especially the leadership.